Philadelphia, Philadelphia, are you ready? City of brotherly love, home of smoking Joe Frazier. Come on. It's about that time, FetLifeStation.com. Philly Fridays, baby, come on.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in to FetLife Station Internet Radio. You are listening to Life Without Parole, LWOP Radio. And my name is Stacey Mandel. I'm in Philadelphia, where it's definitely still a Philly thing. And I co-host the show with Mr. Robert Groves, aka Reentry Rob. Rob is about 27 years down on a life without the possibility of parole sentence at SCI Phoenix. Today, we are really pleased to feature an extraordinary guest, Mr. Sean Bridges. So Sean was incarcerated at age 18, and he received a death sentence at 21. He served 23 years, with 20 of those being on death row. And I have him on the line. Reentry Rob is going to be calling in to speak with Sean at about 9:25. And then we will wrap up with Mr. Harold Burton, who is incarcerated right now at SCI Phoenix as well, but he's not serving a life sentence, and you'll need to stay tuned to learn why he is our guest. But without further ado, I would really love to welcome Sean. Hi, Sean. Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing? I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. We are privileged to have you and to get to have a conversation with you. So some questions here. Rob actually said that you have such a unique story, and he said that you are someone who epitomizes perseverance. And he wanted us to call this show's today's show. He wanted us to title it From Trial to Triumph.
Nice.
So, yeah. Can you tell us how an innocent man like yourself landed on Pennsylvania's death row sentence to die?
Guess you would say wrong choices, wrong friends. It's always a big thing back then when you're growing up and you feel that you got to always take things in your own hands or take things on your own, or you're not a man, or pride getting to the way. But that was my life, kind of. Start off with a simple robbery where I could have called the police and ended it there. But I felt that, no, I got to find out why they did this and go approach somebody and see how I can, be macho. Then, people that were with me took things to a different direction, which put me in a position that ended me in death row.
Okay. So there's obviously no way to actually prepare oneself, right, for that kind of a sentence, that kind of a life shift.
Of course.
How did you manage?
You can't really prepare for something you've never been involved. I mean, that was my first time being in any type of incarceration. So it was never about being able to survive it, because you know what to do. Of course, you hear you hear stories, you hear different things, but you never really prepare yourself for it. So that was my first time in the county, my first time in the cell, my first time upstate. Everything is new to me.
So everything was your first time.
Everything. One thing I got on my adult record, other than this, would have been unauthorized use of a vehicle. That's it. So you got to take each day one step at a time. And you, of course, you always have to continue to fight. There's never a time you would say, I ain't fighting no more. But nobody wants to be in a cage, and especially in that type of cage, where it's solitary confinement. So day in, day out, back then, it started off 23 hours a day, you locked down. It's different now, but back then it wasn't. So you come out from another cage for 1 hour. So at that age, going to there is a whole different life experience.
Let's just pause for a second. Can you tell our listeners how old you were? I told them, actually. So,
well,
you were 18.
I just turned 18. I graduated 1995. I went to jail in 1996. So I just turned 18 there in the county. Everything, you know, fresh. And then I think I was, not funny, but I was, I caught chicken pox. How? I didn't know. I thought I had it already. I caught the chicken pox and the infirmary. Lord came to see me. So all at the same time, me catching chicken pox, me sitting there moaning and groaning, all these bumps on me, and telling me to see the death on me. So how about I turned 21, chicken pox, and 17 death on me. All in the same about week, they tell me all this.
Yeah. That is kind of funny, but not funny.
Not funny, but it's funny.
You were sentenced to die.
Mm-hmm.
Your freedom depended upon the law.
Yeah.
In order for you to defend yourself. So how difficult was it for you to depend on the same legal system for defense when that same system was also, had failed you?
Well, let me tell you a key thing. I want you to keep this in mind. The judge at that time, he told me, I'm not going to give you no fines or costs. I believe the sentence is going to be carried out. So keep that in mind until later on. It's hard, and it's hard because when you start learning the law, and when you start reading your own trial transcripts and your own testimonies and all that, and you start finding things, and you're reading the law books that are supposed to help you, and the law books are plain and simple. People don't understand that. People think that the law is twisted and hard. It's not. It's the people that are involved that twisted the law to their own agenda. If we were rich, read the law clearly, a lot of more people would be outside in the free world. But they don't do that. They always twist it. So that's difficult to muster. I just happen to have, I can't even say the law itself, I have to have a blessing. Because as you may or may not know, I found out that evidence was held in my case, which got me a new trial. At the end of the day, in 2008, and mind you, I found evidence to give me a new trial in 2008.
Do you remember? Wait, so how many years had you already been in at that point?
2008, I found 96. Was it 2008? About that. It was close. No. 2008. So another 9 years.
Oh.
So. So about 7 years. No, 8 years, actually. 8 years. I was in 8 years at the time. Now we found that. But
my excuse is I didn't have coffee this morning. I don't know what you said.
No problem. Yeah, so the little calculation was easy. But I think it was the point of you found all this, your lawyers found all this, everybody knows this, but since it's not going in front of people that are not elected, are not using the society as a reason to turn your back on you. You have to wait. Because I went in front of the same evidence I went in front of the lower courts, the same evidence I went in front of the state Supreme Court. It wasn't until I went to the federal where you were appointed, not elected, that it actually looked at everything and gave me a new trial. But I need a new trial because I had to get out of all the people's way. Because I got the federal, in 2013. So it took me 5 years after getting evidence that give me a new trial to actually get the new trial. But then it don't stop there, because that same system is still being used to actually fight you. So it was like another, let's see, 4 years, because I didn't get affirmed to 2017. So new trial in 2013, affirmed in 2017. So Madden still had to stay on death row until they give you affirmed. So I'm on death row with no death sentence, waiting day in, day out.
Were all of those years in solitary?
Yes. I got a solitary confinement until the end of 2017, going to 2018, where I went down to the county.
So you were, tell everyone what your solitary was like, just briefly.
Well, it's newer now, it's different now.
But tell them what it was for you.
But for me, just imagine yourself being in the old school with bars. So open bars, so no privacy. You smell, hear everything. You're new to this. So again, everything you do, every movement you make is still new to you. So imagine everywhere you go, you gotta be handcuffed. Everywhere you go, you gotta ask people for stuff. So it's a difficult, hard to explain how somebody can actually live life day to day in that particular situation, because what you gotta go through.
And were you by yourself in your cage, or were you with someone else?
Yes. No, when you're in the room, you're by yourself.
It's well, not
in another cell, but you're by yourself. Even now, even though you get out more and you're more movement on the road, you're still by yourself.
Let's talk about. I apologize if any of this is triggering any trauma. If you can, at your lowest point, right, mentally, did you have a support team? And if so, were you impacted at all positively in any way?
You say, what was I impacted?
Yeah, were you impacted positively by any support? When you were, you know, at your lowest, did you have anyone?
Oh yeah, and the funny thing is, even though everybody in life don't get along, but I can say when it comes to being in that position, everybody stick together to a point. When it comes to case law comes down, everybody shares it. When it comes to emotional support, everybody talks about it. Nothing really goes on down there without you being on the forefront of everybody's mind. Of course, you had outside help too, which is crazy, is because you would laugh to find out it ain't the support from the states that you get when concerning the death penalty. It's the support you get from overseas. You get all these letters from overseas of people that are against death penalty. Letters of support. I mean, I wrote somebody that it was a kid that wrote me when he was 11 years old. I don't know if it was a school project. I don't know what it was, but he wrote me all the way up till he graduated high school. I lost touch with him now. But things like that, people like that is what keeps you motivated to fight. And me being who I am, I had kids young. So I had more to fight for than most.
Okay, so you mind telling us how old or how many kids you have? And like,
yes, I had 5 sons. I'm going on my 8th grandchild. My oldest son turns 30. In September. My youngest turns 27.
Okay, so when you were sentenced at 18, you were locked up at 18.
I already have 5 kids, yes.
You have 5 kids. No,
yes.
I'm just wanting to, you are an extraordinary guest, and all of this is extraordinary information.
Right.
No judgment here from me. So you had 5 children.
Yes.
And I mean, just letting that sink in, just like trying to even figure out what to ask you. How did those, the images of your 5 kids, I mean, I'm sure it was a mixture, right, of everything. What was that? Was that in any way a positive course for you?
Ask that one more time, please.
Was having five kids and knowing that your children were out there, was that a positive force? Was that an
inspiration? Yeah, that was definitely a positive reason to keep fighting. But you had something to go to somebody that depended on you once you got there.
Okay. Let's talk about your legal issues a little more. When they started to take shape, how and when did they really start to take shape? What was it specifically, if anything, that finally led to overturning conviction?
It was a surprise to me. It was a guy I grew up with. They wound up finding him some reason somehow, and he started putting in motion about a commonwealth witness against me. And once he said one thing, all of a sudden, it was like a snowball effect, and information started coming out all over the place. And then more and more it came out, more and more we kept fighting, more and more it came out, more and more we kept fighting. Even though the DA tried to fight me tooth and nail on things, it started coming along. And then came to a point that they couldn't fight no more. It came out in the newspaper and everything, that stuff that should have been handed over to me in the beginning, that wasn't. And I finally got the new trial.
And I'm not sure if you touched on it or not, but I think you said there was evidence withheld. That was
yes. They call it the Brady violation, when they withheld evidence that helps you or should have helped you during your trial. That's how I got a new trial.
Okay. For anyone who's listening, who's thinking, you know, I want to help someone that I know pursue this legal avenue. Again, this was federal defense.
Yes, it was a federal public defense office that helped me. It helped me because what they did, what's crazy is because now they actually have a life, somebody got life sentence part of their team now. At first it was just death penalty part where they help people when they go to them pro bono. But now they got people that are doing life that they go help pro bono as well.
Okay, so what should people do if they don't get anywhere state level?
Well, it took me a couple years, but I always tell people, don't have your mind focused on a state level. Put everything you need to put in, exhaust all your remedies at the state level, but have your mind prepared to make your biggest fight in the federal.
But were you prepared? Were you open to that, or were you?
Yeah, I was definitely prepared when it came to getting things done in the federal. Because we did everything we can. I mean, we literally did everything we can in the state level, but it just was not hearing us. I mean, so much so they more or less was mimicking every word that a DA said. So how is it that you are a judge and you look over cases with an open mind and go by the law, but you're literally mimicking, sometimes verbatim, the same word the DA used? You know what I'm saying? And you're not supposed to do that. But then when you get to the federal, and it's the breath of fresh air because you're actually now seeing what law that's being filed looks like. Not saying they're always perfect, no, because some do the same thing in the state courts do. But yeah, some do actually go by the law. And when you see their response brief or their opinions, so to speak, you're like, man, finally somebody's listening. And then when you finally get that call, because it was crazy, I got a call from my lawyers. You know, I got the phone with them. I got a call from my lawyers, and I called them. And they were like, are you sitting down? I'm like, what you mean? I said, Matt, what's up? Oh, we got a new trial. Okay, 4 years later, same thing. Call your lawyers. Call them. Are you sitting down? No. They affirmed it. That's how I knew, all right, it's time now. Now it's time to go. But like I said, it's always a double-edged sword when it comes to this as well. Because let's just say that you know your case better than anybody on this planet. While the lawyers look at your case maybe 8 hours out of a week, maybe. I'm being generous. You got 24/7 to look at your case. And you probably could beat, win everything. But know that you're about to go to a trial or be let go. But you got to make a decision because you know how the system works. So you got to make a decision about you. So I wound up making a decision that was best for me because I know I can make it out here in this world. So I made a decision, open plea that not knowing what the judge was going to say, what the judge was going to do. So remember I told you in the beginning, keep in mind what that judge said to me when he sent to me. I'm not getting no fines or costs because I believe the sentence will be carried out. But guess what? That same judge that said this to me, the same judge that had to resentence me. And he said, I never had opportunity to resentence the person that I sentenced to death. And while it's unfortunate that I had to take an open plea that was 23 to 80, which more or less, I'm coming right out. I mean, I had to do like 6 months, something like that. And I got out on my first try, but I'm still on paper. Unless things change, I'll be in paper for the rest of my life. But I was able to come out here and thrive. And I continue to thrive. So as you say, the question about the system and to rely on the same system that put me here is a difficult thing. But sometimes you have to use what's put in front of you to achieve what you need to achieve.
Yeah. Well, you epitome for me, for the example of how a lot of our systems are designed in certain ways that are not good for any of us, and yet these systems we're currently in, so we have to use them in order to actually transform them. But you're just a shining example. You're an extreme example, unfortunately. So how did you keep going with your belief that one day you would be vindicated? Was it spirituality, religion?
Well, let's be honest. When you're in that type of situation, while you are fighting, while you are, you know, just not giving up, not rolling over, you really don't know. So of course, you gotta hold on to something. I took my shahadas and became Muslim in prison. And I'm still Muslim today. And I got blessings. And that's one of the things. And while for most family and friends is out of sight, out of mind, and not that they don't love you, nothing like that, is that it's still out of sight, out of mind. You still hold on to the hopes of maybe one day getting it. Like I prepared to make it. I prepared what I was gonna do when I got here. You know what, like everything I was gonna do, but I prepared to make things happen once I got here. So I was able to, once I touched foot, I was off to the races. And that happened to have the blessing and support of different people that allowed me to achieve certain things.
Okay. So is it possible to actually use words to describe the feeling that you had when that moment came that you were able to be free of your literal, there's no other word, your shackles, and walk out?
Okay, so when I got a new trial, started doing my time, so now you know you had the habit, especially in that type of situation, you had the habit to ask a lot of questions to a lot of different people. To see, and you always want that the opinion that people give you to fit the mindset you're in. So when you go ask questions, but and you mind you, you got a lot of people probably never going home. But you got to ask different questions. Somebody might know somebody that knows somebody that knows somebody. So you're asking questions about parole. You're asking about the board. What should I do? How should I do it? How should I be? What should I do while I'm here? What program should I take? Everything you're supposed to do. So that was the thing I was on, that thing I was doing. And again, you have to have the best of lawyers that really believe in you and fight for you. So my parole packet that was put together like a brief, a lawyer brief. And I have had the blessing to be somewhere with somebody that was my childhood friend. It was unfortunate that he fell in 94, 95. I fell in 96. He got life. I got death. He's home now. With a blessing of the commutation, but he was running all kinds of programs. So I made a letter and sent the letter up before I even got back to Greater Fort, saying to put me in every program you think possible. So again, asking those questions, I was able to get to the Greater Fort and start off by, and all that. By the time I got to see the parole board, I had at least almost 30 certificates under my belt.
Right. So just briefly, because Rob's going to call in. Just give us that feeling of, I mean, can you describe when you walked out, you're free? Can you describe it with words?
You can't. It's hard to explain because I had a little bit of it. just by having to do trial. And I had to go to a medical procedure outside jail. And I was still in shackles. I'm still in handcuffs. And I got out the prison car and was standing in the parking lot. I felt free. Because I knew what was about to happen. I felt free right there. So the day let me go. The day that I walked out, I'm still on cloud nine. And 3 years later. So yeah. The feeling never goes away, because now everything is first for me. I went to Puerto Rico. That was the first for me on a plane. Everything's still first to me. So I don't think that feeling never goes away. So the feeling of walking on cloud nine all the time is the best feeling in the world, because you come from a place that you thought you'd never be. And you come from a place you thought you'd never see again. So just imagine having your best meal, your best dessert, have your best friend near you, have your best house, have your best everything you think about in life all the time. That's how it feels when it comes to being in one place that you thought you'd never get out of to finally making it.
Mm. Well, completely unjust and horrific that you had to go through what you went through to be able to have what you're describing now.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm very happy for you. We're going to take a quick music interlude right here so that I can have Rob call in from SCI Phoenix. And when we come right back, Rob should be on the line with us. So LWAP listeners, please don't go anywhere. Hang tight, Sean.
Okay.
Welcome back. This is Life Without Parole Radio, LWAP Radio, and I have re-entry Rob on the line. Hi, Rob.
Good morning, Stace.
Good morning. Good Friday morning. So Sean Bridges is still here with us.
Okay.
And this has been an extraordinary conversation. His experience is extraordinary.
Absolutely.
Yeah, just wrapped up with what it's like for him. What it was like for him the moment he got his freedom, and what it's like for him every moment since. So that's where we left off.
Yeah, I'm glad, because now I can go ahead and take on the freedom part. Good morning, Brother Bridges.
Good morning. How you doing?
Good. Is it cool? If it's cool, if I call you Musin?
Yes, it is.
Okay. I'm first of all, I want to thank you for carving out some time for LWAP Radio, so you could share what I call from trial to triumphs. Musin, I want to spend this portion of the interview, speaking to the blessings of life and your experiences since regaining your wings. My first question is about sleep, the sleepless nights that, society has no idea what we endure, the dream and the plan and, the praying for, your eventual release. They say there's beauty in the struggle. Can you describe, you know, your mindset when the world was finally at your disposal?
Like I was telling Stacey, given the opportunity when it comes to knowing what's about to happen, is a anxious feeling in itself that you can't really describe, because you know you're about to get there. You're not there yet. Anything can happen. You know you're about to get there. And then finally, when they tell you, all right, it's time for you to walk around the jail and get your signatures from all the places, from a library, from places, some places you never even went to before. And then they tell you, all right, we're turning your phone off. All right. And you're down to one box in your bunk. You're sitting there. You know, the next day, early in the morning, they're about to tell you, pop your stuff because you're leaving. And when they come get you, you're like, all right, time to go.
All right.
And you're walking. You know, being where you was, where I was on the road, you called it the dead man walking, right? Now reverse it. Now you're doing a walk to the front door. You're walking to a place that when you were in there, it was off limits for you to walk to because you're an inmate. But now you're walking past that, past this, and past that. And now you walk out the front door. You walk into the visiting room where everybody's waiting for you. The same visiting room that your family go to come down and see you. But then what's funny about Phoenix, in their visiting room, they're facing the opposite direction, so they can't see you walking behind them. So to be able to tell them, hey, can I get a ride? This, and you see 20 heads turn around, looking at you, crying and smiling and laughing all at the same time. There's a feeling that you never forget. And I said 3 years later, and I'm still walking on cloud nine, and I continue to walk on cloud nine.
That's good. And I'm praying my joint into existence, you know, and this is why I do things, and you know, this is what I do, this is why I do, you know, this, I think that these platforms, this is exactly why I do the things I do, not only for myself, but for others, you know, to make sure that, you know, we keep hope alive. You know?
Right.
I say this all the time, man, it's, you know, there's no rehearsals when, you know, you're thrown into a world of darkness. You know, Jay-Z has this verse that refers to, being locked up minus the bars, you know, your physical confinement has been lifted, but are you truly completely mentally free from that harrowing experience?
You always keep something in your mind mentally, because you got to remember where you came from, so you never go back there.
Right.
There's going to always be little things that you do that remind you of that. Like my pet peeve of what I've, remember, we used to press a button and it would turn off for us. Well, it might be minimal, but I turn the water on and walk away. And I'm always corrected. Why leave water on? I said, sorry, I didn't know I left the water on, because I'm so much in the habit 3 years later still thinking that if I press the button on the sink, it's going to turn off on its own. Mm. You know what I'm saying? So it's little stuff like, yeah, I'm out here. Yeah, I'm doing good. I'm thriving, and I continue to thrive, continue to make change. There's always a little thing that reminds you where you came from, which is not a bad thing. That reminds you where you don't want to go back to. As adults, like I told, I came in of 18. I graduated in 1995, when you're 96. So we were always from
SCI, Phoenix State Correctional Institution.
This call is subject to recording and monitoring.
As a youngster, we was always not really thinking. But now, as adults, it comes from where we came from. You're a thinking man. You know what I'm saying? Even where I was, still a thinking man. Every action, everything you thought about before you make any type of movement. So yeah, it's a change. So mentally, it's about you, how you want to be. So it's not about holding stuff in. It's not about being expressive and asking help when you need it, and surrounding yourself with like-minded people. They got the same goal. That's inside and out.
Ain't no doubt. We spoke about this before. Like I was so, like when I first had the opportunity to meet you, and you know, just to know that, you know, outside, you know, your present work, you also do so much on the reentry front, and that's exactly, you know, my position within the institution. So I have personally worked on the reentry field for over 12 years, going back to SCI Greaterford till now. And I stay in direct contact with many of those who have gone through that reentry process. How was your transition, you know, when you first came home, you know, as far as resources wise, you know, housing, employment, you know, et cetera?
Well, my transition is a little different, but when it comes to support, I had that. But that support don't help you when it comes to employment because you still run into walls. Like I literally had a job fair for a reentry service place I was part of. And my first job interview, they liked me, had a second job interview. Second job interview went well too. They said, listen, we want to hire you. You got to go get a background check. This and that. Now they knew my background because it was a reentry job fair. So anybody had a background. It was a day of, 2 hours before time, they told me, oh, we can't hire you because you're record. I said, hold on. First, you got a job fair for reentry. And I never heard you said it would be a benefit, not a hindrance. It happened twice. I happened to get blessed and have a job in you because my lawyer knew somebody at Montgomery County Courthouse. And that's what we got now. I wound up getting hired. And now what I was doing, I was like a receptionist slash background check slash client calls. Where I'm now is the expungement specialist. Been here 3 years. You know what I'm saying? That's with my background.
Yeah, and the reason I asked you that is because the general public has no idea that, you know, those on death row or serving, you know, death by incarceration sentences, you know, are excluded from certain higher education opportunities, you know, trade certification, yes, programming, you name it. And now that the death row is now actually, and I want to stop calling that death row, you know, them brothers is now amongst the population, and
yes,
they'll be free one day as well. But they're now walking around with us, and they have this huge gap in their programming, you know, and that handicaps you. Because those that are blessed to regain their freedom, you know, they have these huge gaps in educational backgrounds and employment histories. And I just wanted to go ahead and touch on that, you know what I'm saying?
Well, people don't really know is that once you're put in a position to get your freedom, and since you've been back there for so long, like you said, never had opportunity to do programming or education, stuff like that. So now, going in front of the board, you have to scramble. You got to scramble to get all the different types of program you got to get to even see the board to even have opportunity. They're not saying to you, oh, well, you've been gone, so it's okay. No, they're saying you're going to stay an extra year because you didn't do this, even though it wasn't your fault because you was at where you was at. They didn't let you do it. So they let me get a GED or they let you do don't break right now, but a different program you got to do in order to, they were mandatory for you to do.
Yeah, and no doubt. Best know this though, because I make sure that, you know, because our criteria in here is 18 months or less, but we don't follow that. You know what I mean? We make sure that we get everything that we need for the men before they go home, but if there's ample space, I make sure that I make sure that the space for life is in long term. So I want to make sure that, you know, that's known.
Right.
I use the platforms I'm blessed with to provide a voice for the voiceless, bring awareness, you know, to our failing system, and also highlight the importance of second opportunities. How important was it for you to personally succeed in order to be that visual confirmation that shatters the status quo?
Well, it's very important because if you really care about your brother that you leave behind, because like a double-edged sword, you got to show outside that if given the opportunity, as many people like me that are still there, I want them to see me as a unicorn. Like who comes home that still on paper, get a job where I got a job at the same time, be a director of reentry services for a nonprofit.
It's crazy.
And still work on paper. And I'm not talking about 2 or 3 years, I'm talking about 45.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? That you're always gonna have somebody looking over your shoulder. But when they see you, and what the funny thing is, because a lot of people don't know it, I talk to DAs now. I talk to judges. I'm talking to the same DAs and judges that put me where I was, that asked me to help them talk to somebody, talk to a person that they don't want to see go back to jail, talk to a kid so they don't get trouble in the streets. I went to a school, two schools, last Thursday, and was there for four periods, talking to classes of over 100 people, 50 people, hoping that I can touch them. And when they hear my story, it touches them. I ask direct questions. You know what I'm saying? And this is where you want to be. This is what you want to do.
Man.
You know what I'm saying?
Your story touched me, bro.
Got to. Yeah, listen, this is, you know, like people come home and make excuses. Well, I can't do this. I can't do that. Then when I say, all right, this is where I was. This is what I'm doing. What are you going to say now? Because you can't get no deeper into the hole than I was. You can't. There's nothing else after that. So for me to be from there, where I'm at right now, if I don't tell you, you'll never know. You will never know about mental health. You will never know about the lonely nights and the unanswered phone call or the I live in Burst County. You know what I'm saying? Rutherford is maybe 30 minutes away. I got no visits. Not because they don't love me. I got mad family. The life don't stop for you. So to have all that and come home and get the warmth, the love, and a lot of people wouldn't see you to succeed. So you can show people behind you. Right? They ask me, like, why do you do what you do? I do for myself. I do for my family. At the same time, my biggest thing is I do it for those left behind because the state reps, the senators, the congressmen, they all need to see that nobody wants to be in a cage and given the opportunity, they won't succeed. All they ask for the opportunity to succeed because nobody in their right mind. So if I'm telling you, nobody in their right mind would have said, I want to do crime, I want to be in a cage. There's always something behind that.
Yeah.
And nobody ever takes the time to actually see or learn. But people like us, we take our time for it.
I think you kind of touched on this, but I want to get some clarity. Exactly. You know, to go from where you were to where you are now, you know, it's remarkable. You know what I'm saying? But can you tell us a little bit more about, you know, where you're currently employed? What position you hold and like what your duties consist of?
I'm currently employed at Montgomery County Courthouse, Criminal Courts Office. My job is expungement specialist. I'm the only one in Montgomery County that does this. I serve 30 district justices. I serve the courthouse. I serve people who walk in, lawyers, DA, everything goes through me.
You have 1 minute left.
And if you're eligible for expungement, I'm the one that actually processes your paperwork getting expunged.
Hey, listen, Brother Moussa, first of all, you know, we're getting cut off. But listen, man, I want to thank you for your time. Listen, I want to thank you, for all you do.
I appreciate you giving me the opportunity.
Absolutely. You know, I look forward to staying in contact with you. You know,
we're going to do work. We're going to do good work.
Yeah, ain't no doubt. Because work in this ranch, I think it's extremely important we utilize this inside and outside approach. Your number's on my list. I'm waiting for it to clear. I appreciate your time, man. Peace and blessings to you, man.
You as well.
I appreciate you, man. All right. That's my time, y'all. I want to thank all those who have tuned in. You know, same place, same time, same fight. Grant you, Rob, no rehearsals. Why? Because I know I live it. Don't go nowhere, though. Stay with the interview on my friend, close friend of mine, Mr. Harold Burton, live from NCI Phoenix. Stay blessed. Stay blessed, everybody. And once again, Musen, bro, stay blessed, man. Thank you for all you do, man.
Thank you for using.
Bye, Rob.
Goodbye.
And we'll take a short musical break, and we'll be right back with Harold.
Baby, I think there's something. Baby. Because you're a good girl, and you know it. You act so different around me. Because you're a good girl, and you know it. I know exactly who you could be. Just hold on, I'm going home. Just hold on, I'm going home. It's hard to do these things alone. Just hold on, I'm going home.
All right, LWAP listeners, I have Harold Burton here from SCI Phoenix. Hi, Mr. Burton, how are you?
Hi, how you doing, Ms. Mandel? Thanks for having me.
Yes, welcome. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for getting to the phones and calling in. we've got some questions for you here. So, you know, Rob told me that you're not serving a life without parole sentence yourself, but you're supporting those who are. So my question is, why?
Okay. So the answer to your question is that in 1998, when I was just 18 years old, my uncle, Anthony Dooley, was sentenced to life in prison and is currently serving a sentence at SCI Benner. So as a young, immature man, I didn't comprehend the magnitude of pain that my family has and continues to endure. by my uncle having to spend the rest of his life in prison. In recent years, his daughter and my cousin, Seneca Dooley, has dedicated a large part of her life and resources in a valiant attempt to restore my uncle's freedom. Her passion and resolve in trying to restore her father's freedom has resonated with me to surround myself amongst the serious-minded men here at SCI Phoenix, most of whom are serving actual life sentences and or death by incarceration.
This is a call from SCI Phoenix State Correctional Institution.
This call is subject to recording and monitoring.
Sorry about that. And who are also effectuating positive and meaningful changes from inside and outside of prison.
Hmm. So can you tell our listeners how long you've been incarcerated yourself, and if you don't mind, what is your sentence?
So I personally have been incarcerated for approximately 7 years, and I am currently serving a 17 to 35 year prison sentence.
Mm-hmm. Can you share about your legal battles?
Sure. My legal battles have been very difficult. To make my answer more concise for the sake of time and brevity, I was convicted in the Montgomery County Court of Common Pleas by a jury of the crime of drug delivery resulting in death. However, I was acquitted by the same jury of the predicate offense of recklessly endangering another person. So in other words, the jury in my case made a determination after weighing all of the evidence adduced during my trial. It came to a conclusion that I did not recklessly engage in conduct that placed the victim in this case, who unfortunately did pass away, in danger of death or seriously bodily injury. Therefore, because the Commonwealth did not prove every essential element of the crime of drug delivery resulting in death, as a matter of law, I am legally innocent of the crime of drug delivery resulting in death. Unfortunately, my trial judge, Stephen T. O'Neill, substituted his own personal judgment for that of the jury and held that my actions were, in fact, reckless. To date, the appellate courts during my appeal process thus far have upheld Judge Stephen O'Neill's biased and arbitrary determination and specifically considering the conduct of whether I was reckless, which the jury specifically acquitted me of, in causing the death of the victim in this case. This in and of itself violated my basic and fundamental constitutional guarantee to have the facts adduced at my trial determined by a jury.
SCI Phoenix State Institution.
This call is subject to recording and monitoring.
Sorry about that. So this in and of itself violated my basic and fundamental constitutional guarantee to have the facts of my trial determined by a jury under the Sixth Amendment of the United States Constitution.
Okay, that sounds pretty difficult and complicated.
Yeah, to say the least.
So once you are released, do you have any plans on fighting the system, trying to transform the system as it is?
Absolutely, I do. So I plan to work closely alongside my comrade, Sean Bridges, who has been a true and dear comrade and has also provided invaluable assistance, not just for myself, but also many other men and women alike, in helping to restore all of our freedom. I also plan to focus my work in the Montgomery County area, specifically in the capacity of providing legal assistance to indigent individuals. I would also like to focus my effort in an attempt to establish a conviction integrity unit within Montgomery County. I am of the belief that because there's no meaningful oversight for the Montgomery County District Attorney's Office, they are able to function in an arbitrary and discriminatory manner. The lack of oversight in the Montgomery County is problematic for an additional reason. You can look at how the head of Philadelphia's District Attorney's Office, Larry Krasner, is making a conscious effort in righting the egregious wrongs which were perpetuated by former district attorneys, such as Lynn Abraham and Roger King, who purposefully and intentionally withheld exculpatory evidence, which proved that numerous individuals were either actually innocent or at the very least cast very serious doubts on the integrity of their convictions, which in turn has resulted in a record number of exonerations. This is also due in large part to Mr. Krasner's willingness to even consider the review of decades-old district attorney and homicide files when warranted. This is why I believe a similar review process should be implemented in Montgomery County as well. It would be incredulous to believe that prosecutorial misconduct is only unique to Philadelphia. Programs such as Dateline and 48 Hours and also Death Row Stories clearly depict this to be not just a local, but a nationwide problem as well. Therefore, I believe that every county within the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania should follow the suggestion of our newly elected governor of Pennsylvania, Josh Shapiro, in regard to expanding a review process such as the Conviction Integrity Unit, which exists currently in Philadelphia.
Okay. Well, I'm glad that that is your plan, and it's a needed plan.
Yes, I believe so also. Thank you.
So Reentry Rob told me that you did a presentation on the Groves Notebook and the LWOP radio show for one of your classes, I believe your Villanova classes.
Yes.
So can you tell us a little bit about that and what inspired you to present on this?
Sure. So before I answer your question, I would be remiss if I did not extend my gratitude and appreciation to Kate Maloney, who is the director and liaison for the Villanova University program, the prison program, as well as all of the wonderful and brilliant professors who have dedicated their time to come behind these prison walls and expose us to a higher education. So to actually answer your question, my inspiration for doing a presentation and promoting the Groves Notebook and Life Without Parole Radio is actually twofold. The first is that all of the students who were in my public speaking class all were in a like-minded space with regard to the content of what their speeches were about. For example, one of my comrades, Brian Charles, delivered a powerful speech on juvenile lifers and how science supports that the human brain is not fully developed until the age of 25, which in turn supports the rationale that the current juvenile lifer bill should be expanded from the age of to the age of 25.
Yep.
Another example, So one more example is the speech that another one of my comrades, George Fraticelli, delivered with respect to second-degree felony murder reform. And secondly, I wholeheartedly believe in the initiatives that you, Rob, and Suave have brought to life with the Groves Notebook and Life Without Rules radio platforms. With that said, it was my hope that my wonderful professor, Ms. Juanita Weaver, would share the information about the Groves Notebook and Life Without Parole Radio with her on-campus student at Villanova in order to spread that information to a more diverse audience.
Well, that would be great, because I've tried my contact at Villanova and haven't heard back. So, wishing you luck and power, and you will probably be more successful than I am. yeah. So, speaking of higher education, what are your thoughts when it comes to higher education opportunities behind bars?
Well, to answer your question, it is my personal belief that obtaining a higher education behind bars will put an individual in a better position to obtain success upon release or even while still incarcerated. It is truly the great qualifier for a person seeking a higher education. So for many of us who are minorities and have been marginalized in our communities, the public school system has failed us miserably, unfortunately. So whether it be the lack of resources or the bill which enacted the rationale of leave no child behind, even where evidence exists that young children are struggling with the curriculum, it is unimaginable that a person in the workforce would be promoted to a higher position when, at his current position, he is not meeting the standards required of him. So along with being enrolled in Villanova, I also spent the lion's share of my time in the prison law library. I am a firm believer in CLE, which is an acronym for Continuing Legal Education. Because one thing for sure, the law is a fluid concept, which can change as the disposition of the courts change. And a perfect example of this can be seen with the overturning of Roe versus Wade opinion and the current Supreme Court's opinion in Dobbs, which has, you know, essentially banned abortions.
Yeah.
For one.
Are you in there with Mr. Charlie Diggs?
Yes, I know Mr. Diggs personally. He's a great mentor of mine, someone that I debate law with on a consistent basis, day-to-day basis. Not so much debate, because we almost always come into agreement with one another. But he is definitely one of my mentors.
Yeah, he sounds like a legend to me, and we've had him on the show. And then we've had the pleasure of also speaking with Marco Maldonado, who, as you know, used that legal law library.
You have 1 minute left.
Used that legal law library, right, to earn his own freedom after whatever, 26 years. So keep on keeping on. Anything else you'd like to say before we have to go?
Thank you once again for the opportunity.
Sure.
For allowing me to express myself on your wonderful platform. I feel privileged and grateful that, you know, I was selected and chosen to, you know, to speak my piece, you know, and hopefully inform and inspire other people who are seeking freedom and who have empathy and sympathy towards our plight.
It's been an honor speaking with you, Harold Burton. We appreciate you getting to the phone and taking your time to compose your thoughts in a really chaotic environment. Thank you. I wish you well. I wish you safety. I wish you peace.
As you as well.
Thank you for using Securus. Goodbye.
All right. Take care. Please don't go anywhere. Life Without Parole listeners, we will be right back.
So different around me, 'cause you're a good girl and you know it. I know exactly who you could be. Just hold on, we're going home. Just hold on, we're going home. It's hard to do these things alone.
Life Without Parole listeners, this brings us to the end of the show. Every Friday at 9 a.m., we welcome you to join us. The show is an extension of Rob's original initiative called the Groves Notebook, and you can visit the Groves Notebook Facebook page to learn more about the Groves Notebook. Thank you for listening. Happy weekend, and thank you, Lester Kenyon at FetLifeStation.com. Peace to everyone.
I got my eyes on you. You're everything that I see. I want your high love and emotion. Endlessly, I can't get over you. You left your mark on me. I want your high love and emotion. Endlessly, 'cause you're a good girl and you know it. You act so different around me. 'Cause you're a good girl and you know it. I know exactly who you could be. So just hold on, we're going home. Just hold on, we're going home. It's hard to do these things alone.